Good morning, everybody. I'm sure all of you are in a state of, what can we say, uncertainty. Nobody really knows what's going on. And I thought, what could I do on my podcast channel to be a bit of fun and be a bit different? So what we're going to do, I won't talk about anymore, is do a virtual trip to Dartmouth. Now, I thought I couldn't really do this on my own because it wasn't going to be very interesting and I might crash the boat. I wouldn't, I'm only joking. But so what I've done is I've got a friend of mine and who's featured before on the channel, Mark Taylor, Coxswain1 on Instagram. Now, you're going to have to forgive me for the audio quality because I'm really struggling. And if any of you've got any advice out there of how I can do this better, please do let me know. But Mark's on my phone on speaker. And what we're going to do is we're going to imagine on a beautiful day here in Devon, which it is, it's lovely. We're going to imagine that we're going to go down to the marina, jump on a Manhattan 52, and we're going to take the boat round from Torquay Marina to Dartside Quay. So let's get on with it, Mark, shall we? So let's imagine you've just walked into the office. So my usual request from Mark is get the kettle on. So Mark would come in the office and he'd come in and what do you want, Mark?
Black, one sugar, please, mate.
Fine, okay, no worries. Right, let's get it on the go. Let's get in a takeaway cup. So, right, we have a little general chit chat and a general catch up, and then the process, what we're going to do is guide you through how we do this as well. So it's not all going to be banter, it's going to be a bit of how we actually do this. So what we'd do now is we would go and get the keys from the dock masters. So most marinas have an area where the keys for boats are kept. So we go and see the dock masters and the Torquay guys, Torquay Marina, give them a shout out, very, very good. And they keep all the keys in the office on a keyboard. So go in there, we sign the keys out, and then we're going to wander down to the boat. So, Mark, I'll go and grab the keys. You drink your coffee. I'll be back in a second.
All right, mate. Okay.
Right. So, go and see the boys. Got the keys. And now I'm going to go down to the boat. So, we walk down the gangway, down to the marina. Let's fast forward. This is good, Mark, in virtual life, because we actually get to the boat a lot quicker than reality, don't we?
Yeah, usually about an hour down the line, isn't it?
Yeah, general chit-chat. We'll have to remember this. Maybe we need to stop talking to each other in real life and just get on with it.
I know.
So when we get down to the boat, we actually know the particular boat we're going to go on. We know the boat quite well. So we know it's all in pretty good order. But what we're going to do is we're going to jump on board the boat and imagine we're jumping on for the first time. When Mark with me, I would usually adopt the job as crew, wouldn't I, Mark?
You'll be my crew.
That
for
crew.
Sure. So I'll shout at you.
To put
give
it
you orders for a change.
Put it politely. So we jump on board the boat and I would say to Mark... We've done so many boat trips now over the years together, we sort of know how each other works. So really what we'd do is we'd jump onto the boat. I would go and check the lines and fenders. So Mark, what would you normally do when you jump on a boat?
It's like a psychic connection, I guess, I suppose we've done it for so many years. So I'll just do my bit. I'll stick my head over the back of the boat, make sure there's no debris around the props, the back end, all around the exhaust. Go in, unlock it, put the batteries on the panel on the left-hand side on those 52s. Then I'll nip down into the engine room, just make sure the seacocks are on. I know they are, but it's always best to check. Sometimes somebody else might go on there and not put a sign up on the controls to tell you that they've closed the seacocks, especially if they had the boats been serviced or what have you. Check for anything hanging off. Check the fuel's okay if they've got a glass bowl. Just a general inspection, nothing too in-depth, only so much you can do. So once I do that, I'll go to the helm, turn on what I need as regards to navigation, horn, and always even if I go drive him upstairs, just in case we call down, we have to go back down again. So anything to do with navigation, moving about, I tend to turn off, make sure it's.
Hang on, Mark. We're losing you on the audio. Keep that phone on your face.
Yeah, it's on there, mate. It's there. It's stuck to my ear.
Good.
Bearing in mind, I'm in the middle of nowhere doing this. So I would just basically prep the boat for the electronics I need. Either I know where I'm going, I always put on the navigational systems as well. Then I'll fire the engines up, make sure that everything's settled on the gauges. Especially oil pressure, go outside, make sure there's water coming out of the exhaust. Then I would prep the rest of the boat. So I would close all the doors to give it structural integrity, make sure the portholes are closed, close the toilets, lids, make sure nothing's going to move around. People tend to leave the boats like it's a flat. So there's sort of ornaments lying around. So we stuff those away. Covers, make sure the cupboard doors are pressed shut, and then just wait for 10 minutes to let the engine warm up. Whilst I'm doing that, I'll go upstairs, get up the helm position upstairs, prepped, take the covers off, transfer the throttles to upstairs, get moving in and out of gear, check the thrusters, bow and stern if it's got it, and then I'll give you the thumbs up, ready to go.
So in that time frame, basically, whilst Mark's doing all the serious stuff, I'd be there checking we got enough fenders, checking enough ropes, and really also in my own head, working out how I'm going to untie the boat. And as Mark said, people tend to treat their boats in many different ways. Some people tie their boats up like kits of spider's web, and other people have two ropes and that's basically it. So whilst Mark's getting the mechanics ready and checking the engines and checking the exhaust temperatures, what I would do is basically, like I say, check the lines. If I can, if the boat has got literally 10 lines on it, what I would do is reduce the number of lines on the boat. So your critical lines, your fore and aft lines, and then your spring lines. And then, to be honest, if I can do away with the spring lines, or certainly at least one of them, I will do that in the process while we're getting the boat ready. I also personally, and Mark and I often have this debate, I can't stand to see boats going along with fenders dangling down the side. So if I can remove fenders from either port or starboard side, then we would. And then basically, as Mark said then, once he's got the engines up running, we're confident they're okay, he'll give me the thumbs up. And depending on the scenario with the berth, then I will undo the ropes in a certain order. Usually it's the bow line first. So on this Manhattan 52, it's moored predominantly port side two. So I'll nip up to the bow. I'll chuck the bow line onto the foredeck. Now, if anyone's seen a Manhattan 52 in a marina, what they'll notice is that it is an incredibly high boat. I'm not particularly tall, but I'm not particularly short either. I'm pretty normal. So I've got to throw the rope fairly high onto the foredeck. And the secret to it here is not allowing the rope to dangle into the water, because as I'm sure you'll appreciate, nobody wants a rope in the water to go around a propeller. That's either one of the drive propellers, or indeed on more modern boats, or all boats nowadays, I shouldn't say more modern, but the bow thruster. So chuck the bow line right up onto the foredeck, walk your way, don't run, don't want to see crew running around, look like an amateur. So basically walk then down to the back of the boat. On the way to the stern of the boat, I would undo any spring lines and again toss them up onto the side. And as I jumped on at the stern, taking off to the stern line last thing, I would say to Mark, all clear. And as crew, it's really important to let the skipper know that basically the boat is untied. One quick what I will interject here and say is we have to make sure we've all done it. Anyone's got a boat and listening to this will appreciate this. Check you've unplugged the shore power. I think over my career, I mean, we've all done it, haven't we, Mark? We've all left the shore power.
I've done it once and shut down a marina.
It's amazing how strong a shore cable is. You try and go in a stern, the next thing the boat suddenly stops and you realise you're still attached to shore power. So make sure your shore power's off. And for everyone's sake, I shouldn't swear there, for everyone's sake, make sure you unplug the live end first, so you're not dealing with a live cable. The number of times you see people, they unplug it from the boat end first and forget they're walking around with a 32 amp live cable in their hands. Probably not the most sensible thing to do in the world. Anyway, we're gibbering on, so we're going to get this boat out of the marina. So right, I'm going to get on. Right, Mark, you're all clear to go, let's go.
All right, just a quickie on that, just so everybody knows, 9 times out of 10, the way it's described as the way we always do it. The bow first, off first, because I can control the bow quite easily. Most boats, power boats, you have to get off on the stern. So it's let the bow go. I can control the bow with it, with an outside engine or with a thruster. He steps on. I make sure he tells me he's on, that he's inside the cockpit before we set off. Obviously, I don't tell him to crack on with it until I know there's no traffic. Where this boat's based, there's a lot of ferry traffic. So I make sure, and he can't see from where pontoon side. So I have to make sure there's no traffic back behind me or in front. Let's the line go. And where the boat's lying, it's being pushed off a hammerhead, usually by the prevailing southwesterly. So it's quite easy. So once he's on, the bow's already swinging out. I let the whole boat just drift out. If I get bored of the process because it's a light wind, I'll just use both thrusters, just pull it out into space, and then I'd rotate. And what I'd usually do is rotate into the wind, so my bow swoops back across the pontoon, because I've got to go do 180 degrees to go out to the marina. So off I do the spin. Whilst I'm doing that, old Niven's here and we sorted out the fenders, and I'll just go out very slowly. Obviously, I don't want to cause a problem for him walking around the decks. And he'll want to get the fenders in before we get out into the open water, which could be potentially be lumpy or there's boat traffic, so the water's been shaken up a bit. So I just set out, and what I'm looking for is traffic, obviously. Even the marina is 500 boat marina, there's another 200 boats on another marina next door, and the council marina plus the ferry traffic. Being that I'm on the flybridge at this stage, I can see over the sea wall, I can see if there's any traffic coming in the yacht's mast, I can see boat wakes from showing me any boats around underneath the wall, and off I go, doing 4 or 5 knots. The boat goes quite quick, even tick over, so I'll be using one just on the throttles, wheel straight, shaft joint, so wheel straight, taking over one engine at a time, just chugging out, doing about 3 knots. Now, you could argue you could use the horn, but we're not commercial. If I can see there's no traffic, I don't tend to do my 5 short blasts. I'll just continue out. Once I get past the seawall, I'm outside. I'm in clear water. There's no speed limit on me. And then I'll make a course.
Hang on a minute. You're forgetting the boat. I've got to get back in the boat yet, everybody. So before Mark goes charging out the marina, I've got to get all these fenders in, and I've got to get 12 fenders in. So, you know, I'm pretty good at it. I've done it enough times, but I'm getting older, aren't I? So it's not quite as easy as it used to be. But basically, I'm getting all the fenders in.
Stop.
And again, you know, most of us work together. We know everyone's styles. So really, we know how to do it. And Mark will know, but I'll just get on with it. I do always wear a life jacket. We wear the spin lock life jackets. If any of you have ever seen those, have a look. But they're really, really cool. And it's one of those life jackets, actually, you don't mind wearing because they are so cool. So I've always got a life jacket.
And I've done a radio check at this stage as well, whilst I'm waiting for the engines to warm. Yeah, just so in case anybody picks me up on that.
Making sure everyone's safe. So basically, we go out in the marina. And then, as Mark said, what we really do then is, once the fenders and lines are in, we're quite happy. The first point is Berry Head, isn't it, Mark? We point the nose towards Berry Head.
To be fair, like you were saying, I'll wait for you to come and sit next to me up at the helm. Once you're up there, I can obviously throttle up. So, yeah, Berry Head from Torquay is about 6 degrees magnetic, roughly. So I just sort of come out, sort of turn that way. I tend to put a bit of trim tab down to help me get onto the plane to begin with. This keeps the nose down and just keeps the forward momentum, the velocity going forward rather than a little bit up in the air. It's just a personal thing. There's no right or wrong, but I find it makes the boat more efficient. So I put a little bit of trim tab down. On that boat, it'd be the Bennett's about 3 or 4 lights. Nice gradual acceleration. Keeping an eye on the oil pressures as I'm doing so, and the temperatures, and just get the boat onto the planing wave, and off we go. And I would adjust the throttles according to the conditions. But today's a lovely day, it's flat calm, so we'll probably get up to, I don't know, 22 knots, something like that, 23 knots, nice cruising speed, trim tabs, probably leave alone, maybe take off a little bit, and off we go. Wind in our hair.
The sunshine. Oh, living the dream. So Mark and I will basically run across Torbay, and without sounding too...
3.5 miles.
Yeah, exactly. It's not too far. And you can see it. I mean, Berry Head, if anyone's actually seen Berry Head, if not, as always, they go and have a Google. It's a pretty big lump of rock. It's pretty hard to miss it, and it's pretty sheer, isn't it?
It's got a high. It's a high cliff, but it's got the smallest lighthouse.
Yeah, because it's so high. It's
very high up. Yeah.
So basically, we aim for Berry Head, and then basically, once we get around Berry Head, one of the things
avoid the pots.
With loads of pots. I mean, one of the things, if you've ever boated around the southwest, really, it's mainly in the UK, isn't it? And generally in the UK, there's lots of them, but lots of crab pots, lots of lobster pots. Well. And on a boat like that, the last thing you want to be doing is wrapping a rope wrap around a prop when you're at speed. And thankfully, I've never had it happen to me. You've had it happen to you, I guess, a few times, haven't you, Mark?
Yeah, well, I've had it twice. Once I managed to slow down and reverse it, it spun out. And the other time, I had rope cut it on, so it just chopped it up. So probably must have with a fisherman. But part of me thinks that you need to perform with crab pots around, especially around our area. They come in all shapes and sizes. You know, it could be a plastic bottle, it could be something covered in seaweed, it could be a pink ball, a black ball, you don't know. There's no flags on them, so it's very hard to see. And no, we can't, around this part of the world, we have to be very careful doing night coastal runs. You'd have to go out 5 or 6 miles and then turn and run along the coast quite a way out just to avoid the problem. But Berry Head is, Torbay is pretty good, apart from you got your racing markers, which are obviously easy to see, they're flagged. But as soon as you get to Berry Head, the pots start to appear. And although Berry Head is very steep-sided, and that continues underwater, about 90 feet deep there, about 30 metres. There does be a lot of traffic there, fishing boats and, I say pots. If you've got a wind over tide, it can get choppy there. So it's always best to take it a couple hundred metres at least wide round. At least gives you vision around the corner. And if you do have a problem, you've got time before you drift back onto the rock. So always give it a bit of a wide berth, just as a safety point of view. But it's a very easy straight run, and it is a safe run. But you just got to keep your eyes open, which is why Tom knows this. So I'll be focusing on what I'm doing. He'll be looking out for pots for me as well. So, you know, two sets of eyes are always better than one, obviously. So we get around.
What we're going to do now is we're going to fast forward a little bit, because at this rate, we'll actually be talking about it. What I'd like to add, I'm watching this minute count on his podcast. We're at 15 minutes. Well, at this point, we'd already be halfway to Dartmouth. So we need to hurry up a little bit, Mark, because in reality, we'd almost be there. We head basically next to the next sort of visual marker, which is as Mark said, the Mewstone. And then there's two cardinals there, isn't there? There's two South Cardinals.
Yeah, so yeah, you've got the East Blackstone, the little rock on your left, and then you've got the Mewstone, which is a bigger island on the right. So we go between the two, which is possible. Unless it's rough water, always the dark, I'd go around the outside. But then you've got two South Cardinals. Now, they're quite good, because they mark the... It took you to go around the Mewstone and into the River Dart. It acts like a big right-hand bend. So I just like join the dots. You've got the two South Cardinals, and then after that you have the green castle lock, green starboard mark. So I turn, join the dots between those two and then the green, and then I'm turned around the Mewstone and then facing the entrance of the River Dart, which is very hard to see from out at sea, a couple of miles out. So, but obviously at that distance, really a couple of miles away, it's very, very easy. And what I aim for then is there's a blue house just above a sector light, which is obviously for nighttime use. There's a blue house there. I aim for the blue house. Now, at this stage, officially, I'm supposed to throttle off to the speed limit, which is 6 knots. But obviously in the winter, it's dead quiet. I might go slightly quicker until I get closer to the entrance, because it's still about a mile to go. It's pretty straightforward, to be fair. There's no real worries. I remember we were talking about Nimble Rock. There's a little rock.
Oh, yeah, there's Nimble Rock, yeah.
That we always drive over, which is halfway between Berryhead and the Mewstone. But even on the worst spring low tides, it's about a couple of metres underwater. But I would be a bit more cautious if I was on the yacht. And going along around low water.
As you approach Dartmouth, I mean, if anyone's been into Dartmouth by boat, and I'm sure some of the listeners will have been, and it is a beautiful place, and it's a really steep valley. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful port. And as you enter the mouth of the river, you've got Dartmouth Castle on your left side, your port side. And then as you go into the river, some fantastic houses in the market, some beautiful properties. Both.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those rivers. I've been going up and down there for 30 years. I've never got bored of it. It's stunning. And there's always something going on. There's sort of new houses being built or renovations. They're all amazing, you know, multi-million pound houses. It's just a fantastic old port, but it's got a bit of an ash to it as well. And there's always, well, apart from that at the moment, but usually it's bustling with life. You've got the ferries going backwards and forwards. There's a chain ferry. There's a couple of car ferries as well. There's marinas dotted up and down. There's a steam railway on the starboard side as you go up. If you're lucky, you can catch the catch a train.
And you've got you've also got a Royal Naval College there. And again, quick Google on that. You'll see, if anyone's not been to Dartmouth before and you want to have a look what it's like, you know, go and have a look. It is an amazing, amazing place. Yeah. And I think when we live so close to it, you almost take it for granted. But actually, when people visit there that haven't been there before or don't go there that often, they're like, wow, this place is amazing. And it is amazing. But what we're going to do today is we're actually going to navigate up to a place called Dartside Quay. Which we wanted to choose Dartside because it gives us the ability to talk about going up the river. So as Mark said then on the on his note there, you've basically got two ferries in Dartmouth. You've got the lower ferry and the higher ferry. The lower ferry is a great bit of kit. I mean, it how they get away with it with health and safety nowadays, I do not know. But it's basically a barge and a tugboat, isn't it? That you've got to sort of it's a vessel restricted in its maneuverability, isn't it? So once you basically have to give that plenty of room, and again, if you know what you're doing on the River Dart, you have to let them, if they've started to leave their slipway, there's two slipways either side, then basically you've got to let them go. And one of the most tricky scenarios is often if they've all just left, then you've basically got to stop, haven't you? You've got to stop making way and let them do their thing.
The only problem with that, I find, is the tides. If the tide's running hard, you're trying to maintain position away from them. And if you've got to make sure, you have to be aware that you're not drifting towards them or being drifting back down the river, down towards some sort of moored boats. You've just got to be a bit spatially aware, really. You have to remember and where you are.
After a lower ferry, you then basically navigate up the river, and you're heading, you've got moorings on your starboard side, you've got some commercial moorings, there's also a fuel barge in Dartmouth. And then you've got the higher ferry, and the higher ferry is a much more modern affair, what you'd expect to see. So it's actually on cables, isn't it?
It's an Australian built. It's been here 5-6 years.
Yeah, holds like 50 cars or something, doesn't it?
But it's quick.
Yeah, it is quick. It is quick, and you've got to be careful. You don't
get. You've got to be careful. Yeah, but they have a. When they were about to set off from either the left or right hand bank, they fire up a yellow light, flashing the yellow light, just to warn any boats that they were about to set off. So then you just stop because they are quick. And of course, you've got to. Remember, especially on a yacht, there's a chain they're dragging behind them, so that you've got to let that drop before you go past. But it's easy enough, it's simple. After that, it quietens down. You might get a few of the cadets for the Naval College out on their bosuns doing their practices, manoeuvre ball practices just beyond the higher ferry. And then you go past Dart Marine on the side.
Yes, you've got Dart. You've got Dart Marine, haven't you, on your port side before then? So Dart Marine is probably one of the nicest marinas out there. It is lovely. It's a very small marina. It's not owned or run by a big chain. It's very nice. It's nothing like the size of Torquay or Brixham or Darthaven, which we all love, and we do lots of business there. So I want to keep everybody happy. But Dart Marina is quite nice. We've got a couple of Sunseekers there. We've got 47. What else we got there? I don't know. We've got a few. We've had more in previous years. We haven't actually got that many there at the moment. But as Mark said, then after you go past Dart Marine on the starboard side, you come up to Nos. Now, Nos Marine is quite interesting because at the moment it's going undergoing a huge redevelopment process where it's going to be turned into... Premier Marinas are turning it into...
Yeah, Premier Marinas bought it, yeah.
And that's going to be very smart when it's all done. So that's good. The what?
We've been talking about doing it for 30 years, so hopefully it'll be done in my lifetime.
Well, hopefully, yeah, hopefully. We might get some business out of there, Mark. You never know.
Yeah, you never know.
And then after we go past Nos, that's really when the river starts to quieten down, doesn't it? I mean, in the summer, both sides of the river are lined by these trees, and in my mind, the trees look like clouds. They look like you could go on top of the trees and walk along them, don't they? It's like big clumps of broccoli. Yeah. It's so dense. The woodland there is so dense. And the valleys are incredible.
Valley steepen up, and the river obviously constricts in, and it's so wooded. It's beautiful, with the occasional old sort of Georgian or Victorian houses sort of cut tucked away. But it's stunning.
It is beautiful, and it's deep, isn't it? I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, you've got as long as you don't go on the River Dart again. If those who've done it, as you go past Nos, you must stay very much to the starboard side, the outward side of the bend. It always gives me sort of heebie-jeebies when you're going up the river and you see people that don't really know what they're doing on the inside of the bend. I mean, I know for having done it, you know, that inside of that bend is pretty shallow there, isn't it? You don't want
to
be...
inside of any bend sort of river tends to silt up because it's the slowest part of the movement when it comes down. But, you know, you get cruise ships go up as far as Dart Marina. You get submarines come up type at the college, so it is pretty deep. It's very navigable. But the deepest part, funny enough, is just past Nos. So you go past Nos, about another half mile on, there's a little village called Didisham on the left, and just before there, there's a rock in the middle of the river, which is slightly further left, with a red...
Is that the Anchorstone, is it? That's the Anchorstone.
Anchorstone, yeah. It's got a port hand marker on, you obviously leave it to port. Well, as you go past there, the river drops down about... 22 metres. That's chart datum. So you're going to be up to about 27, 28 metres deep there at high tide. Very deep. Good fishing there. Got a lot of seals popping their heads up around there. Obviously, they know a good thing when they see it, and they it's their sort of buffet area, I guess you call it. And just above there, on the right-hand side, up tucked behind the trees, is the estate, Agatha Christie's old estate, Greenaway.
Oh, yeah, Greenaway Quay. Again, that's another place, isn't it? Listeners should Google, if they haven't seen it before, Greenaway Quay. Go and have a look. It's a beautiful house, and you can go and visit it. So I think it's a National Trust property.
And the gardens.
But as Mark said, one of my favourite things to do, and I would like to do this, one of my favourite things to do locally on a boat down here, it's a Didisham. They've got some visitors' moorings which are patrolled by the Dart Harbour Authority, and you can go and tarn to the mooring boys for the afternoon or overnight or a couple of nights. But Didisham's got a great pub, hasn't it? The Ferry Boat Inn, which is very, very cool.
And then
next to the pub is the Anchorstone Cafe, which they do a scallop Caesar salad, they call it, and that with a bottle of rosé in the summer. by Jesus. Sorted.
And you can, and on the pub, you can sit on the sit outside on the little wall on the beach. Watch
a couple of pints. Couple of pints.
The kids trying to catch crabs off the pontoon. Yeah,
it's
great.
Yeah, it's a lovely spot. And in times like this, it makes you realise how you forget about these places, don't you? And at times like this, I mean, the idea of today of going up to Didsham, not anchoring up, but picking up a mooring buoy, going for lunch, having a couple of pints. Obviously not you, Mark, because you're driving the boat, but and I wouldn't have more than a legal limit. But the it is an amazing spot, and I think this whole of Corona.
It's my favourite spot in the area.
Yeah, it's going to make everybody realise.
When I'm teaching people, it's like right, okay, you've learned how to get out of the berth. It's the go-to place then for me, because then you do a bit of navigation, seeing the river, giving them somewhere else to look at, and then go out to the Didsham, picking up a mooring buoy. So that's mooring buoy practice. Although in the summer it's busy up there. Each mooring has a name, a number, and a maximum length overall. So, you know, if you're a big boat, there's only about three moorings you could actually use. But you can raft occasionally. Get a little ferry across up to, or your own dinghy. Call up the ferry on Channel 10, get across to the pontoon where the pub is, and then have a lunch there. And it's the loveliest thing. And people go there all the time because it's just the perfect type of boating scenario. Leave Torquay, do an hour at sea, up the river, lunch, otter back. Yeah, it's fantastic.
And we're nearly there now. We're nearly at our destination. So once you're at Didsham, if you look to your right hand side, you can see the Dartside Quay. Can't you? Well, you can't really see it at all because it's an old quarry.
Because the river opens up like a lake, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And the river continues to the left around the bend towards Totnes and beyond, but to the right where the river looks like it expanded to a lake, you'll see that boat masts in the distance in the quarry, and that's Dartside Quay. But you have to be careful navigating it because right in the middle of that sort of lake-like appearing area is a big mud bank called the Mud Hours. So you have to follow a line of moored boats on moorings towards the Dartside Quay to stay safe and stay in deep water.
So that's
and the only time you can get out there is at high water. So our lift, for example, would always have to be an hour or two either side of high water. Otherwise, you wouldn't get out. You'd run aground. So time is very important, especially when you're calculating when you're leaving Torquay, prepping the boat, and how long we get round there, what the weather's like, and all that sort of thing.
It's also important as well when you remember you've got to get to Dartside Quay, you've then got to get back. So I mean, fortunately, MDL do have a relationship with a taxi company there, so they can get you back to Torquay. And if you look at an aerial map of our area down here in Torbay, Dartmouth, etc., Didsham is actually very close to Torquay, very close to our office as the crow flies, because you've come back on yourself whilst you're going up the river. So what we're doing now is going to take the boat round to Dartside, and a good team of guys there. They will basically lift the boat out of the water, chock it, won't they? And then it can be anti-fouled. And...
Yeah, we don't put the fenders out, but Tom will get a roving ball fender, and he'll stand on the bow in case I make a cock up. And we'll be called in. They'll call us in. There's a light with flashes on the machine. You have to be there 15 minutes early. They prep the lift. They'll call us in. So then I have to take into account the wind, because in the southwesterly, I'm getting blown beam on, going into a concrete sort of lift area, so I have to be careful. So Tom's there with his roving fender on the bow, and I'll just obviously make sure my thrusters are on and just calculate with the wind what I need to do. But it's once you get past the first part of the wall, the wind obviously it protects you from the wind, and then it's pretty easy for them and just line up, and it looks a lot narrower than it actually is. You get in, it's fine.
Once you're in the slings, that's somebody else's problem. Yeah. But I mean, I hope.
Yeah, tell me to shut the onions down and put the boat. You know, just
yeah. And obviously, we have to lock the boat up. We have to make sure the covers are back down, and then give the guys the keys. But I mean, hopefully, hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of what it is like for a virtual trip round to Dartmouth. I mean, we could talk about this. I mean, we're already at 28 minutes talking about it.
We're not face-to-face, so it is difficult.
It is very difficult, but I mean, hopefully that gives you a bit of glimmer of hope. You could listen to this whilst enjoying a cup of tea in your garden, and just imagine starting the engines on that boat, going out to a bay. We've got beautiful, clear water down here, and I'm very passionate. I'm not from Torquay, as you may have heard in my first podcast, but for anyone that says or suddenly doesn't give this local area, it's just... they need to come and see it on a day like today. We've got crystal clear water, we've got bright blue skies, beautiful countryside. It's not commercial. It's no commercial shipping. We're not passing oil tankers. We're not passing ferries out here.
It's not super busy.
We can do what we like, go where we want. And that really does say a lot. And at the moment, the idea of being able to do what we want and go where we want is really quite special. And I think we're all going to have to realise when we get back after this crisis, is realise that
it's
when
still
we...
Gonna be, it's still going to be there.
Yeah. We're so lucky
it's still
to...
going
to
be there.
You know, and fortunately from where I live, I can actually see Bury Head, and not that close, admittedly, but I can see it in the distance. And there's no boats out there. When I was out on my daily exercise over the weekend with my family, we walked down to the waterfront, and there's nobody out there. And it's just so unusual to have lovely weather and not see boats out there, and it is such a shame. But I can understand the guys and girls and everybody who works for the NHS and the care services are doing such a good job, and we're so proud of them, as everybody is. And I mean that from the marine industry, because without those guys, we're never going to get back to normal, and we're going to lose lots of people we all love and cherish. So we need to make sure that they carry on doing what we're doing. So as everybody is, I urge people to stay at home, hashtag, very important. I'll stick that on this podcast. I really do hope the audio quality of this is going to be good enough. Mark and I, we've got loads of podcasts we want to do, and it's so frustrating because at the moment I can't find a way of doing it properly. So anybody that's listening to this,
when you're not sat next to each other, it's very hard to sort of feed off each other. So doing it remotely is quite a struggle, isn't it?
It is hard, and I think we're going to have to get Mark some sort of microphone, because I don't know how well this is going to come out. But I'm going to give it a go. Please give me some feedback. Remember, my Instagram handle is at SunseekerTom. It's a bit quiet on there at the moment. I do need to try and get my act together and update it a bit more. Mark is at Coxswain, which is COXSWAIN1. So go and check him out. He's putting some posts on at the moment as well. So there's loads on there. We've got some more podcasts coming up. So I'm going to sign off now. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
No worries. Take care. Everybody stay safe.
Sorry to leave you in your car for it. Mark's sitting in his car because we were trying the audio in his car rather than there.
Burning up.
So I do apologise. But
no,
I hope you have a good day, and stay safe, and I'll speak to you soon, okay?
All right, take care.
Cheers, Mark. Right, I'll sign off as well. Guys. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, leave us some feedback, and speak to you soon. Cheers for now.